Hello and welcome to another episode of The Grey NATO, a loose discussion of travel, adventure, diving, driving, gear, and most certainly watches. This is episode 382, and it's proudly brought to you by the always growing TGN supporter crew. We thank you all so much for your continued support, and if you'd like to support the show, please visit thegreynato.com for more details. My name is Jason Heaton, and I'm joined as ever by my friend and co-host, James Stacey. James, are you staying cool there, or is it as hot as it is here?
I am not staying cool. I just finished. It was too hot to bother going for a run or even a walk outside, and I had a bunch of emails and expenses to do, and so I did it on the treadmill, and goodness sakes, I used to be in my cool basement downstairs.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Now I'm upstairs, and yeah, it's even with the fan, it's plenty warm today. We're just up over 30 degrees Celsius, which is no laughing matter, although not as bad as what's going on throughout parts of Europe right now.
Yeah.
It's been a busy week. The weekend went by very quickly, and it was one of those ones where we hadn't been at the cottage for a couple weeks, so we went up and there's just a ton of chores. And by the time everything was done, it was like, all right, let's pack the van and head home.
Oh, jeez.
So yeah, hoping this weekend the weather cooperates again. It was lovely weather this past, but man, we've got some busy weeks coming up for sure. We're getting really close to Chicago.
Yeah, we sure do. We've got this week and then next week. Basically, we fly out, and we've got a kind of a packed schedule. We were just going over it before we started recording here, and it's all fun stuff. It's going to be great. We've got our event, and we're doing some diving and meeting up with old friends and sushi, of course.
It's a nice little social weekend.
Yeah, exactly, right.
We are doing an event with Citizen at Forbidden Root. The RSVP is currently full. That said, we are running a wait list, and we simply ask that if you're wanting to come to the event, it's 7 to 9 on the Friday night. But join the wait list. And the other side that we would ask is if you're into the event and can't make it or decide you don't want to come or whatever, please just render your cancel your RSVP so that the ticket goes back into the pool and we can get as many people there as possible. But we are at absolute maximum capacity for the number of people that Forbidden Root can accept for an event. If we end up with a sizable wait list, we will have to maybe look into other options next year. But it is very difficult to predict these sorts of things. Very much looking forward to that and hoping to see many of you listening now at that event in just a couple weeks' time.
Yeah, it's looking like a sizable crowd. It's going to be just a packed space and, I can imagine all the chatter and the fun conversations and the great watches and,
for sure,
and that sort of thing. It'll be great. And you and I fly in earlier that day and we're actually doing our little sushi meetup before that. So there will be food at our event with Citizen, but James and I might be stuffed full of sushi.
We're our semi, well, it's now annual because we do it in Toronto as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are now annual or some sort of annual or maybe even more than annual sushi dinner, which I very much look forward to. A nice time to catch up with you. And a huge thank you to Citizen for partnering with us on the event. I think it's going to be incredible. And we'll certainly have a report from the show, which brings us to our summer breaks. So we will have an episode that comes out on the 16th, talking all about our weekend in Chicago. And then after that, we're taking a couple weeks off. So there'll be no episode July 23rd or 30th. And then we will be back August 6th.
Yeah, I mean, I just can't. When you say the word August, I just shudder.
I know, it sucks.
I just can't believe that we're already talking about August, and by the time we're back from Chicago, it'll be well into July. So, I mean, try not to get depressed. Summer's going well so far, and we've had good weather and we've had a lot of fun. But it goes way too fast every year.
It just blows by for sure.
In other news, we suddenly realized this morning that we've had the Ludvigsen Explorer collection in the TGN shop. This is a set of, a little of everything. We've had t-shirts and caps and mugs and some posters and jigsaw puzzles and that sort of thing up there for quite some time. And it's time to wind it down. So if you're interested in picking up anything from that collection that was designed by our good buddy Matt Ludvigsen.
Shout out, Matt.
Yeah, such a great set of designs that he did for us, and those have been quite popular. We will be turning those off come July 31st. They were kind of intended as a kind of first half of the year into summer sort of themed thing. Get out and explore, build a campfire, do some diving, whatever you're going to do, it's time to wrap that up. So those will be available in the shop until July 31st, and then no more. So get them while you can. And then we've got a few ideas for later in the year. Nothing concrete yet, but stay tuned. There will be more stuff coming in a few months. But for now, keep an eye on the shop and get that Ludvigsen Explorer Collection stuff if you want it.
Awesome. Yeah, good stuff. All right.
Yeah.
So how's your week been since we chatted last?
Yeah, it's been busy. I mean, we've had a social week. I mean, a social weekend. We had a kind of a wedding celebration on Saturday, kind of at a horse farm. It was kind of out in the countryside. It was quite pleasant. And then, yeah, I met some friends for dinner on Friday night. And so, yeah, I mean, more social than an introvert like me is accustomed to, but it's been great. Summer kind of fills up that way. You know, you end up sitting outside a lot more and having cocktails or, you know, grilling and that sort of stuff. So, it's all good. And then it's been hot here. And so I've been trying to, you know, get in the water when I can. I've been still training for that open water swim event that I've got on August 1st. And, I was out last Friday morning and I managed to do 90 minutes straight swimming, which is, a little shy of 2 miles, which puts me on schedule for the event, which is a 2 mile swim. So I'll go back out there, later this week. It's just down the road here. There's a lake, which, is one of the great things about Minneapolis, and the parks board here does a nice job with setting buoys out across the lake and having lifeguards on paddle boards to keep an eye on swimmers. And it's a really well-organized thing. So, taking advantage of that. And then, it looks like both you and I are into season 2 of The Agency.
Man, yeah. I mean, definitely no spoilers. We would never do anything like that, but I'm really enjoying it. I'm kind of savoring it. Mm-hmm. This time of year, I also find, like, by the time I shut down at the end of the day, it's 9 or 10 and I just go to sleep. yeah. So like last night I had all intention of watching something, and I sat down, I read a little bit of Rendezvous with Rama. I'm still working through. And then I was like, I think I'll just go to sleep. And I went to bed instead, but I'm absolutely loving it. I would say if you like the first season, you'll really enjoy the second. It kind of starts with its foot on the gas as well, which is cool.
Yeah, there's no drop off. I was really a little bit nervous. So often follow-up seasons just kind of lack the zip of season ones, if you will.
Yeah, they set up some good stuff at the end of the first one.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's great so far. And I'm just marveling at how great the casting is in this show. It's so mm-hmm. tight. All the same characters are back in season 2. You've mm-hmm. got Jeffrey Wright and Richard Gere, you know.
And they're giving Richard Gere some more lines this year or this season, which is nice.
Yeah. Yeah, so I just finished episode 3 last night, so I'm into it. But like you, I'm not going to go crazy. So, it's
definitely been enjoying it so far. It's great.
Yeah, right.
And then other than that, I was down in New York City last week for a variety of things, to finish up some VO for a project we're working on. Went to the launch of a new Leica, the SL3P. Very, very cool. I shoot an SL2, which I like very much. And this is kind of the definitely the highest evolution of that form currently. And then we also did the Hodinkee Happy Hour. So we had it at a bar nearby, and several TGN guys and gals showed up. So a big thank you to those who came out and held us down for that event. It was a good turnout, and probably a good format for future ones. The one thing I did want to make a note of, and it's just, we'll call this a little bit of podcast parenting. when it comes to the Hodinkee Happy Hour, you do not need to message me. You do not need to message people on the Hodinkee staff. You don't need to leave comments on the site. Every single one will have an RSVP. It will be posted on the site. It'll be posted on social. You won't just happen to miss one. We'll make sure that we do our normal promotional round. Please just stay tuned to the site and to the Instagram, whichever version you prefer. That's where we will share that news. And none of these are like secret events. They're posted about a week before. We are currently in planning to do one towards the end of July, but just stay tuned to the site. It doesn't require any two-way communication. We will announce as soon as we have all the details and the RSVPs open.
Cool. Yeah, I'm glad those are going well. Seem to be well attended. And boy, yeah. you're keeping busy in the social scene, aren't you?
I just think that so much of the internet is an unkind, unwelcoming, or simply very noisy place. I feel very strongly that at least at a personal level, that the more you can be face to face with people, mm-hmm. The better these sorts of things can be for everyone involved. And it was always my goal when I got the chance to take over leading, you know, an element of Hodinkee, to do as many sort of face to face casual events as possible.
Yeah, nice.
Besides that, yeah, like I said, was up at the cottage very for, you know, day and a half this weekend. set up my mosquito dunks. I can't tell you how bad the mosquitoes are this year.
Oh, that's terrible. Too bad.
They're chewing through my kids.
Wow.
My you know, not quite 1 year old son was just covered in bites.
Oh, no.
They like his blood plenty.
Yeah.
So I'll put it in the show notes. I think I have in the past, but I was able, apparently there's been a run on them and they're a lot harder to buy now. But we bought a package of these mosquito dunks that you can kind of set up like buckets of water and grass clippings and sticks and stuff.
Yeah.
And then anything that's bred in that water will never actually hatch. Huh. So you can disrupt the breeding cycle is the goal.
Huh.
But look, speaking of water, we've got a whole sort of main topic devoted to something I did a couple of weeks ago. Before we get to that, you want to do a little bit of risk check?
Yeah, it looks like we both came proper for the subject of this episode. I'm wearing my Submariner, my Rolex. I've had this on for the past 2 weeks since I got back from the trip to DC with National Geographic and Rolex. And, you know, more than anything, it's kind of the one watch that I still keep on a bracelet. And when it's this kind of hot and sticky as it's been here, it's just the most comfortable thing. I keep it, you know, slightly loose and you can just adjust the micro adjust with a little toothpick or whatever and make it fit just right. It's just kind of loose and cool and dries fast and doesn't hold sweat. So that's kind of the main reason, as well as the fact that it's just such a comfortable, great watch.
Yeah, it is an absolutely great one. And I do think it is when it's this hot, it is kind of a bracelet vibe.
Yeah.
I was down in New York and I picked up my Pelagos, which had been down there for some filming. And nice to be reunited. I didn't realize how much I missed that watch until I didn't have it for a month.
Oh, sure.
And I've been wearing it pretty constantly for the last week or so. But I put it on the rubber when I got back to take it up to... I was like, oh, I'll put it on the rubber, take it up to college. I think it lasted on the rubber for about 6 hours. But for this episode, I am wearing my Explorer 2, my 16570. And obviously that's just to stay on topic with a watch that I wore when I went to Halifax with Rolex for the Sail GP event a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, if you want to, we can dive into Sail GP. Jason, I actually don't know how much you know about this sport. You might already know a fair bit. But I'm going to try and walk people through kind of what the sport is, what I found interesting about it. You know, we weren't given one-on-one interviews with a couple really incredible testimonies that were there. We kind of had group interviews. So I have a couple short audio clips that I did my best that we can get into in a moment. We spoke with some just exceptionally cool people, but it was in a big room and nobody was mic'd or that sort of thing. So I just have the audio recording, which I think turned out good enough to listen to.
Yeah.
But just a couple of short clips will also fill in. Jason, I guess to start, like if we started at the basics, do you know much about the sport in general?
Well, I mean, from what I've seen and read about, it looks like it was kind of an offshoot or kind of a evolution of America's Cup being done kind of in a different, slightly different way, a little more accessible way than America's Cup and more regularly as well. I mean, the boats look very similar, but that's kind of, and I've had some experience with America's Cup boats in the past, but no, I don't know really anything specific about SailGP. So yeah, tell us how it works.
Yeah, so SailGP, the idea is stadium racing. So it's sailing racing formula series. Every boat is identical. There's not a single like real setting that you can change that wouldn't be reflected on any of the other boats. The boats are supported by the series and the teams get the boats from the series.
Oh, okay.
And that's how that works. And so it's an annual international sailing championship. It's called the Rolex Sail GP Championship. They were one of the original, if not the original sponsor, Rolex. And the boats are called F50s. They are 50 feet long. They are formula boats. I'll get into a few other details for that in a moment. It was founded by Russell Coutts. It's an Olympic gold medalist, Kiwi sailor, three-time America's Cup skipper, and the American tech billionaire Larry Ellison. And so they officially founded the series in 2017 is when they began developing. They wanted six identical boats, and they used a team of over 100 engineers and technicians to build this boat in New Zealand. That's the F50. In 2018, SailGP is founded and launches in the UK as a local team, and the first event starts in February of 2019. So it's very new. As far as these things go, obviously, if you kick off a sport in 2019,
yeah, that's tough.
You're really not seeing its growth until the last couple of years. That's some tough timing.
Yeah,
of course. So 2020 was the second season, and that's where you started to see additional teams join. And basically, teams are based on a country. So there's a New Zealand team, there's an Australia team, there's a Canada team, there's a Switzerland team, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So right now, I believe they're up to 13, and they're expanding it next year. Just to give you a little bit of the tech specs, the F-50 is a catamaran, so it's a double hull with like a netting in the center. You have three different wing configurations. And again, it's not like tire choices where it's part of the strategy. The league, the operators of SailGP the day before set what wing the boats will be using.
Oh.
And then the wings are fitted as the boats are put into the water for the racing that day.
And before you move on, I'm just to clarify that by wing, you're talking about what used to be considered a sail.
Right. These are hard foil. There are like a plain wing that points straight up. They have a leading sail, but the main thrust of the boat comes from what's a wing, which is a large carbon fiber system. 18, 24, or 29 meters. The larger the wing is when you have less and less wind. They will fly at speed. Currently with titanium foils, they fly at about 90 to 100, record something like 103 kilometers an hour.
Jeez.
So that puts you in the neighborhood of 50 knots, I believe.
Wow.
They fly about 1.4 meters above the water max. And then you get into some of the crazy stuff. Every boat has two live streams. In terms of video, over 1,700 data channels, 125 sensors. So anything that's happening on any of the boats is less than 0.2 seconds from HQ. So anytime that a team does something that's new, all the other teams know about it by the next day. They can all review each other's tapes. It's like the most competitive sport I've ever come across. There's nothing like what's going on in F1 where you have wing developments, where you have if there's an update, everybody gets the update. Right, like if they change the hull, if they change the software, if they change anything, that goes to all the boats. It's a true formula series.
Yeah,
so it's super competitive, and it's I haven't really experienced anything like it, but the outright goal is nation versus nation competition, designed from the ground up to be broadcast friendly, very close to the shore, and as fast as you can go.
Yeah.
So the only reason the boats don't go faster is currently they cavitate at about 90 kph. So the water around the foil essentially boils and causes a ton of turbulence. So when they're going really fast, they're right on the edge of crashing.
Wow.
Because the boat's moving around a bunch.
Yeah.
In Halifax, we did not see those types of speeds. They just didn't have the wind for it. They didn't have the conditions. And it's considered a fairly difficult race in Halifax. They're in the harbor there between the city and then the Dartmouth side. I would say at times, I mean, there's photos from that'll be in my story for Hodinkee where it looks like the boats are interior to the piers. That's more of an optical illusion, but they are going right by.
Wow.
Like there's whole sections where if you were in the grandstands or we're in like a box with Rolex right on the water, you almost don't need a camp. Like you could just watch them. You can watch them move their hands. They go right by.
Wow.
On these boats. Yeah. And they make an incredible sound when they do it. Yeah. So like I said, the boats can do, so in 10 knots of wind, they can do 70 kilometers an hour. So like they're very fast. 2.5 tons with a wing.
Wow.
So they weigh nothing.
Yeah.
For such a big structure.
Well, actually, one question I have about the boat is, what I remember was, I don't know if it was the last edition of the American, the crew members actually were like on the hulls, they actually had fitted those sort of, they were almost like bicycles, you know, they would actually pedal with their legs to kind of power the hydraulic systems.
Okay.
Instead of using hand winches, just because the legs are more powerful, and they would have these lines of crew members kind of hunched down, and then they would race across as they were tacking and jibing. They would race across to the opposite hull and then jump on these basically stationary bicycles and pedal. Is that not the case with these? It's all hand winching and that sort of thing on these that you could see?
I believe it's hand winching. Yeah, that's what I was able to see. And when I was on the boat, I went on the Swiss boat briefly while it was in the water and got to see some of the controls and where everybody sits. I didn't see anything that looked like you could pedal it, unless I'm very confused about the seating position. So they run 5 to 6 sailors, but they can run, I think, as little as 3, depending on the conditions. So if they want less, like if the wind is that poor, they can run with as little as 3 people. But again, it's not like you get to pick one team to another. You're given, this is how the race will run. and a race itself, of which you could have 3 to 6 in a day, in an afternoon, or we did in Halifax, all depends on the conditions. So they have a 2-minute starting phase where, much like with all the sort of yachting starts, much like why we have a yacht timer, you would have a 2-minute sort of phase where they're really trying to pace and find some wind so that they shoot right across the line at the final signal to for the start of the race. And then they have to extend out to, you know, there's kind of 4 corners, and you have to go to a corner, go to another corner, go to a corner, go to another corner. And then while the boats are traveling to that 4th turn, these two little, they're motorized, so they're remotely controlled, but these buoys so cool. just drive out on their own and form this it's hilarious, it's so cute, and you see them motoring around. Wow. It's how they set up the whole course, so it's all adjustable based on conditions, and they will adjust the sport to make it as watchable as possible, is essentially what we were told by the people in charge. So because of the conditions and a recent big crash that happened in the sport that took 3 boats out. And it takes them, I think they're down to 9 months to build a boat.
Yeah, yeah.
So it changes the whole season if you crash, essentially. If you need that being if you need a whole new boat. But they can adjust. And so they dropped the racing to 9 minutes for a heat. And then they were also able to go from, instead of running 13 boats at the same time, which I would have loved to have seen, they did split fields, a 6 and a 7.
Yeah.
So you got way more racing to watch, which is fun. But I would have liked to have seen them run all 13 at the same time. And we got that impression from the sailors that we spoke with. In a few minutes, I'll play a couple clips from Tom Slingsby. He's like one of the greatest sailors alive. He's the CEO and the team captain and, you know, the guy essentially in charge of the Bonds Flying Ruse Sail GP team, which is now at least partially owned by Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds.
Huh. Wow.
So he's a 3-time Rolex World Sailor of the Year. Okay. Amazing. Right. Yeah. And he sat down and spoke with us for probably like 45, 50 minutes. And I don't know that I've met some athletes in my time, right? This guy is one of the most competitive people, and he just seems very clear and intent on, like, you know, we need to win, and you can understand why he's very good at things.
Yeah.
But yeah, he has won 3 consecutive laser dinghy world champions. Won gold in the laser class in 2012 at the Olympic Games. He has served as a strategist for Oracle Team USA in the 2013 America's Cup, which is when they came back from 8-1 and won 9-8. Multiple championships across multiple sailing scenarios. World Sailing Male Sailor of the Year in 2010 and 2021. And he was the Australian sailor Male Sailor of the Year 5 times.
Wow.
I don't know. There's nothing left for this guy to race.
Yeah.
For sure. And he's currently the skipper and CEO of the Australia Sail GP team.
Huh.
So I'll jump actually to the first clip, which is him explaining kind of how he got into the sport. So let's jump to that clip here. It's just a short one.
So I went through Olympic sailing. As most young sailors, everyone sort of targets the Olympics, and I did the 2008 and 2012 Olympics. With that, I was pretty successful in 2012, and I got an offer to join an America's Cup team. And that America's Cup, I got a few offers, but the team I joined was Oracle Team USA with Russell Coutts and Larry Ellison. And I did 2 America's Cup campaigns, 2013, 2016 with them. And then I'll never forget it, but we lost the 2016 America's Cup to Team New Zealand. And I was standing on stage next to Larry Ellison, and I felt quite guilty. I was one of the managers in the team, and I said to him, I'm really sorry, Larry, that we lost this. We shouldn't have lost it. We should have won this event. And Larry's hard line, I used to interact with him a lot back then, more so than now, but he just said to me, like, that's okay. I'm not upset at all. And I was like, that's not Larry Ellison I know. And he says, this gives me the chance to do something I've always wanted to do. Because the joke with the America's Cup is, once you win it, if you are successful, you can't get rid of it. If you keep winning, you've got to defend it and do the next America's Cup and so on and so on. But he said, now we've lost it, I can actually go and do something I want to do, which is, and then I And then he said, I'll tell you more backstage. We went off stage and he said, I want to start a new league. I want to start something with country versus country competition. I want multiple events all around the world. And I remember saying, well, if you do that, I'd love to be a part of it. And so 6 months later, I'm on a call with Larry and Russell and we're coming up with the sort of foundational rules of the league. And yeah, I left the America's Cup, that campaign, and said, I want to be part of this SailGP journey. And so I joined, I was the first person signed on to SailGP when they started.
All right, that's cool. I mean, you're right about his kind of competitive nature. And it just brings to mind, like, it's so funny how certain nationalities bring out these, like, consistently do so well on certain sports. And it just seems like the you know, New Zealanders, the Kiwis, and the Australians are just so good at sailing. I mean, it's just so interesting to me.
Yeah, it was fascinating to hear him chat about that and to tell the story of, like, you can see that through line of the two guys behind the Oracle team in America's Cup just transition to doing this and take him with them.
Yeah.
And I mean, the sport has some really big names attached to it. If you're a fan of sailing, this is, it's a part of the thing. What I would add to the overall part is, if you like sports, especially if you like Formula One, this is very much presented in a similar fashion where it's a race weekend. It's in a new location. The area is very much part of the equation, right? Just like it is in Formula One, whether it's a road course or a circuit or whatever, like you know all the conditions that are happening. If you're a Formula One fan, you'll know what the temperatures were in Austria this past weekend on the track. You'll know whether or not they repaved any section since last year, all that sort of thing. And I think they've made a sport here that's really, really probably best followed on your phone or on a monitor. Whenever I had no clue what was going on, just standing, you know, on a pier, I could look over at a screen and you go, oh, okay, I can kind of see what's happening. Because the screen shows you which way the wind's going, which is something like, if you're not a sailor, I don't know how you would know necessarily. And also what each boat is doing. Because some of them, you know, if you think about it, they're doing essentially, we'll call it, to keep it simple, this isn't fully accurate, but they're doing like figure eights across a four-pointed course.
Sure.
So if you think that the wind is going a different direction than the boat ahead of you, you might split up, but you might come back into each other after you each make the turn. It's a fascinating thing to watch. And I really, the one takeaway I would support is, if any of this sounds interesting or fun, you got to check it out on your phone. It's free. I downloaded the app and you can watch the races. You can watch a ton of it on YouTube. It looks like some of it might be region locked based on TV deals in various, like, I saw some note online about Italy and stuff like that. I can't comment on every location or locale, but it seemed like something very easy to watch and quite fun to follow and pretty simple to do right on your phone. And the races aren't 2.5 hours like they can be or longer Formula One. It's 10-12 minutes.
It's always been a struggle for sailing to kind of bring it to spectators and kind of make events. I mean, you know, having been to a couple of Volvo Ocean Race venues and America's Cup stuff, it's just, they really try hard to make it friendly and appealing to novices and spectators. And it sounds like through technology and really bringing the course in close to shore, they're getting closer to what, you know, the overall vision is for just bring sailing to kind of the masses, so to speak. Was it well attended? I mean, beyond kind of the press pool and the people you were with?
It was packed.
Was it really? Oh, great.
It was packed, yeah. It felt like most of Halifax was against the water to watch it in some fashion or another.
Huh. Wow.
And, you know, we spoke in speaking with both people behind the program and people from the, like, sailors from the boats. The sport is really just literally hitting kind of its second stride. In terms of, you know, they're opening a training facility, because right now you get almost no time on the boat. All the time practicing has to be even and fair. Yeah. Nobody owns one of these boats. There's not a spare currently. Mm-hmm. So they'll have a spare down in, like, I think it's in the Panama City Beach area in Florida, where teams will be able to actually have time on a Formula boat. And that's also going to help them develop sailors. You know, it was one of the questions I had for Tom when we were chatting was, you know, how do you have to have, like, a baseball card roster in your mind of sailors that, like, have some of the skill set you need or might be needed by this sport. And he, because it feels like you need a lot of different capabilities. And I mean, you know, he got into the, and I can play the second clip, which is also just a short one. It's maybe a minute. Here's Tom Slingsby again, just talking about what it is, how coordinated the effort is just to turn one of these boats.
And so all of a sudden I pick up the sheet half a second earlier than I would have if I said stand by, and then he goes like this. And then we go into the maneuver, and it, and there's, I think there's 36 different functions that need to happen whenever we change direction. Like I need to take the wing sheet, Goobs needs to cross the boat, he needs to get there, Jason needs to switch foils, he's on the grinder needs to change the jib setting. He needs to call the board going down in the lock. I need to press, I think it's 6 different buttons for us to change direction. All these things, it's such a sort of ballet of different motions that need to happen all in perfect sync. And I think our team does it quicker than everyone else because we've sailed together for so long and we understand each other better. Hmm.
Wow. 36 different functions. That's pretty incredible. Wow. Mm-hmm. I'm curious too. I mean, I'm sure you'll get to this, but like actually your time on the boat, like he mentioned pushing buttons and yeah, you know, these are so high tech that there's no illusion that like this is all, you know, hand winches and rope. This is actual, there's a lot of technology here, like electronics. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a ton of data, both sides of the boat. So you're constantly running. Everybody essentially has a leash and the leashes are stacked. So you kind of have to cross at a certain time if you're going from one fender, one hull, one pontoon to the other. And that all depends on your role and what they're doing. If you're setting up for another turn, then there's actions like Tom said, there's about 36 things that have to be done to turn the boat. And that requires an orchestration of at least 3 people, ideally 6 people, and quite a bit of speed to kind of keep everything moving. But in his position, you know, you have a screen, actually there's some kind of just below your waist level in the hull, that might give you some data about what's going on. And then there's another one that's a little bit more visible at the base of the wing. That's playing certain data that you can test. And then there's not lines on the ground. It's not like a racetrack. So you're constantly having to zigzag in and out of the wind. That's how you sail. But at the same time, be mindful of the course and be mindful of any other boat that might be around you. It's an incredible, like I was just kind of jaw dropped as I started to like really consider how much they're kind of doing and how much of it is done just so that people in the stands can watch it happen. Right. Because like, if you know, a normal say like a long distance sailing event, they leave and then eventually somebody comes back and presumably they're the winner. They're the first one back.
Yeah.
And maybe there's a great documentary or you know, maybe they had a GoPro or something and you get some moments from it. But this feels very tactile, very close to the shore, very fun. You know, we got to go over to the whole kind of tech area where they dry dock the boats at night, bring them out on a crane, attach the sail, the wing, and then put them in the water. And then we were able to get on a boat with the Swiss team and actually kind of sit on the netting between the two and get a sense of, and I cannot imagine having gone 60, 70 miles an hour in a boat a couple of times on, you know, glass as far as water goes.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine doing it in a windy conditions. Obviously they have to be windy because it's a sailboat. And just the level of like damage and toll that they can go on them. You know, I had one sailor walk me through all of their gear.
Yeah.
Which includes like spare air, because if they go down, they might be wrapped up in the boat. They might still be tethered.
Oh, sure.
To their line.
Yeah.
Because if you fell into a foil that's going 100 kilometers an hour, you're not living.
Mm-hmm.
So the tether is designed that you can't actually leave the boat. But of course, if there's a big crash, and you know, just recently there was one where kind of one boat T-boned another and broke a guy's legs.
Wow.
And then he was pinned in the hull underwater for some time.
Yeah.
So he was on spare air, and then the rescue divers are there in seconds handing him an absolute tank, getting him out of there. It's a really, really impressive thing. I got really nerdy about, you know, we got to go into like the Oracle data center and they're pulling, I think he said like 30,000 pieces of data off the boat at any given one time. that they're collecting, and all of the other boats can see, all the other teams can see immediately.
Yeah.
So it's all this super competitive sort of stuff. But really, it ultimately came down to, like, you know, it's Rolex. We had all the access you could imagine.
Yeah.
So for the start of the first race, I was on a chase boat. I was 100 meters away from the boats.
Yeah.
Wow. Perhaps. And it wasn't a very exciting race. There wasn't that much wind the first day. It picked up and got quite a bit more interesting the second day. You know, I'll have more of those sorts of details and that kind of stuff in the eventual Hodinkee story. But a really fascinating weekend. Halifax is an incredible city. Had a great time. Really beautiful. Went up to the Citadel. Had a good walk around. Good robot brewery is located in Halifax. So nice. That's one that we're aware of.
Yeah.
And then the other testimony that we got to speak with was Hannah Mills, who's considered one of the greatest female sailors in history. Podium finishes at 3 consecutive Olympics. Twice named the Rolex Sailor of the Year, 2016 and 2021, multiple world titles. We got to sit down with her. It's difficult to express how much she's doing at any given one time. She's obviously a Rolex testimony, and she has kind of played an instrumental role in building the pathwork to bring women into sailing. This is one of the only sports in the world where, like in Sail GP, where women and men can compete directly on the same field. There's there's at least one woman on each Sail GP team.
Wow, that's really cool.
And so there's this Athena Pathway program. I'll include more links in the show notes, and we'll have more about her in the story for Hodinkee. But she has I asked her just quickly what it was like kind of working with Rolex, because you kind of wonder, like, they were first into Sail GP, and then they've been pretty long-term supporters. I mean, you don't commonly hear people no longer being Rolex testimonies, like being cut or dropped, right? But you can definitely understand why people like Hannah or Tom represent something really special, that the true professionals in a sport. But let's get to this very short clip with Hannah Mills. I had a lot of trouble with the audio in this one. The room wasn't quite great. This is just off my phone, as were the ones from Tom. I did my best. It's going to sound a little robotic. My apologies. And Hannah, if you ever hear this clip, I'm sorry for what the AI did to your voice on this one. But I did really like your sort of straightforward response as to what it's like working with Rolex and how involved they are, both in the sailing side and then in these other sort of either philanthropic or supportive projects that she has, like the Athena Pathway program.
And then, as a Rolex testimony, how does that relationship factor into all of these initiatives?
Yeah, Rolex have been a pretty incredible partner, personally, but also with, particularly with Athena Pathway. I think the buy-in to the youth and the women and the opportunity and creating more opportunities within the sport is something we really share. And they've been so supportive. So since they were the first partner that came on board with Athena Pathway, it really allowed us to kick off. And when you have a genuine partner that cares about what you care about, then I think what you can achieve is just a lot greater. And that's really been the case with Rolex and Athena Pathway.
And when you started with that, did you already have a relationship with Rolex and it was able to extend it into Athena?
No, it was actually both came about at the same time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I just finished my Olympic sailing. I just won the Rolex Sailor of the Year. The Women's Cup had been about Athena Pathway. We were kind of in the making of, and so it all came about together, which Very was cool. really nice. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, she sounds great. And I'm curious, you know, as a Rolex testimony, like, what I'm guessing, Yachtmaster on a rubber strap, maybe for both these folks?
Yep. She was wearing a Yachtmaster on the rubber strap, a Everrose Yachtmaster, which looked great. And Tom was wearing the full size, the 42 millimeter Yachtmaster in titanium on the bracelet.
Wow, fantastic.
Both are the right things, right? And then, to fill in that final blank, Athena Pathway is a British sailing team created in 2022, directly designed to compete for youth and women's editions of the America's Cup, which started in 2024. And that came from Hannah Mills and Sir Ben Ainslie, two huge names in the sport. The easy thing to come from all this, and I know I've been rambling for a little while, I had a really good time. It felt very F1-like, but the level of access was much higher. I don't know if it would be the same way in other places, but because you have to do it on water, it's not quite the same as a track that's, you know, an hour outside of Austin, for example.
Yeah.
there's it felt like it was very drawn fully into the city and really involved the city itself. So, you know, I even met a couple of people. I was getting some photos from up on this big area next to our hotel in sort of the waterside part of Halifax there, and met some people who had no clue this was happening. They just came in from Michigan for a weekend. They'd never been to Halifax, and they're like, this is amazing. So they were going to find some good place to sit and watch parts of it. And yeah, I think it's one of those things where if it sounds interesting and you're not already on it, hit the app on your phone and check it out. Otherwise, see if it's in, you know, coming to a city anywhere near you. I think it's a blast, even if you only got to see some of the racing on a screen from a, you know, from maybe a bar or a restaurant nearby. I really enjoyed it. It was a very cool weekend and neat to see Rolex in the ways that they expand into these other things. And you start to go like, why do you make the Yachtmaster at all, let alone the new Yachtmaster 2 and that sort of thing? And then you start to understand a little bit more the way that it's kind of hard coded into what they're doing with the money from all those watches.
Yeah. Wow. That's great.
And before you ask, I did not meet Ryan Reynolds or Hugh Jackman. I'm not against either, of course. apparently they do come to races quite frequently and possibly were in Halifax. I definitely had some people tell me they saw Ryan Gosling, which I can only assume is a Ryan Reynolds mix up. I'm not sure. Canadian guys being Canadian guys.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah, it was super cool. And I don't know. It's meeting Tom and Hannah was a lot like the other times that I've had a chance to meet, you know, like Tom Christensen, the race car driver, and other Rolex testimonies like that. It's just kind of fun to these people that are just absolutely dialed into this thing. And that's, I don't know, that's one of those things that I still really appreciate about Rolex.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. I mean, two episodes back to back where we were kind of on trips with Rolex and very different types of trips and places. But yeah, there's a certain level of understatement, I think, when it comes to their testimonies or their, you know, the people that they support. I think it just sort of kind of trickles down from the brand ethos in general. I mean, Rolex is such a cliche, but the kind of stuff they choose to support and the people they bring on board are, you know, I'm not going to say they're any better or worse, but it's just, there's just a different
level. They always seem to have the right people though. You know?
Yeah, I mean? Exactly. Yeah.
That's, it's not so like true. There aren't other incredible sailors, but the people that they pick or race car drivers or whatever.
Yeah.
But the people that pick, you know, like Hurley Haywood.
Right.
One of the coolest people I've ever met.
Yeah.
That makes sense. If I was a brand, I would want to work with a guy like Hurley. And now that I've met Tom Slingsby and Hannah Mills, I would want to work with them if I was Rolex or really any brand.
They take the long view, I think, you know, with their choices of the people they support. I think they must make very considered choices and then think, if we're going to forge this relationship, we're going to kind of be in it for the long haul. You don't often hear about Rolex testimonies leaving and going to other brands. It's usually the other way around.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's some notable ones that I'm not sure they're super happy about these days.
Yeah, right.
but that's perhaps a conversation for another time. I'm not here to poke undue fun at people, of course. But yeah, I just thought this was a really fun event. Wanted to fill it in. I'll eventually be able to consolidate all of this into a story, I guess. It's a lot. I'll include Andy's story from last year. He attended with Rolex in Geneva when they ran it on Lac Le Mans, and that can give you another kind of dig into even more of the business side of it.
Yeah.
But Andy did an incredible job, and that's kind of where it's setting the bar on my story is kind of difficult because, you know, I've got to try and keep up with Andy, and he did great with his story. So I'll include that as well. Hopefully it's not too much of a ramble. We don't often do back-to-back stories kind of informed by one brand's sort of aesthetic, but I don't know, all of this felt very TGN adjacent to me, both yours last week with the explorers and photographers and divers and all that kind of stuff, and then this one this week with some kind of high level sailing athletes.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyways, all right. There you go. If you have any questions for us for either of these episodes, let us know on the Slack and we can get to them, but I figure it's about time for some final notes.
Yeah, let's do it. I've been following this, it kind of popped up in social media, I don't know, a year or so ago, and then I started following his Substack, and it's one called Atlantic Saints. Maybe,
okay,
you know, those of you that are listeners have seen this pop up as well, and it's always been a little mysterious because I was never sure who was behind it. I had a video chat with the guy who runs it yesterday, just to kind of catch up. We've been kind of trading messages for quite some time, for several months, and just decided to chat because he has a mutual friend in David Concannon, who's been the subject of one of his Substack posts on Atlantic Saints. And it's kind of hard to describe, but if you go to check out the Substack, he describes it as an exercise in pondering life, art, faith, style, and all else worthy. And, you know, he kind of dabbles in things like architecture, travel, there's some watch content, kind of personal philosophy. He interviews interesting people. It's a bit of a mix of, I guess I would say, like a Matt Horonic vibe with Concannon, throw in some Hodinkee and Thousand Yard Style, kind of that sort of mix. It's always something interesting. And the guy who runs it, maybe he wants to remain anonymous because he hasn't really put his name out there, so I won't divulge it here. But it's a good follow. I think I should check that one out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm seeing a love letter to the Peter Blake Seamaster 2254. So that's in our zone for sure. A little Sid Mashburn.
Yeah.
Some Ploprof. Yeah. I see a Land Rover on here for sure. Yeah. This looks awesome. Yeah. New to me. This is great.
All right. What do you got?
Yeah. Mine,
I know what you have because I watched this before we started and there's some super cool stuff in here.
Isn't it? Yeah. I've had Josh Fenn videos on Final Notes in the past. Usually it's like tech stuff. You know, he's recommending a few, you know, travel tech or whatever that's under $50 or EDC things. But he recently did a video that's just called Next Level Camping Gear for 2026. And look, all of these are, you know, suggesting things that you could buy. I'm just trying to keep up with camping gear. It feels like I dipped in pretty hard when I bought a bunch of stuff 5, 6, 7 years ago. And then I have good stuff and I've kind of dipped out. And now I jump back into one of these videos and I go, man, there's some really cool stuff in here. I'm really now inflatable tent curious.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just looks really convenient and you get some ceiling, mm-hmm. which I don't have in any of the tents that I own. And of course my family's not getting smaller and camping remains kind of on the horizon. Sarah and I have kind of agreed that instead of getting rid of the Wrangler, which mm-hmm. we're really not driving that much anymore, we're probably just going to turn it into like an overlanding vehicle.
Oh, sure.
But probably not go the full route of the tent on top of it and all the gear, mm-hmm. but rather just a nice kind of sealed, the way that you might think of a big bin of camping gear
yeah.
in your garage. This would be a whole vehicle, which is like, you know, we could take it somewhere if we want to. So that's kind of on the horizon. So I've been starting to dip back into sort of like what's going on in the camping scene these days? What's the new sort of stuff? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I got a chance a little while ago because I bought you a few things for Christmas this past year that kind of fit into that category.
Yeah.
But I didn't go as far as stuff like, yeah, these inflatable tents look really cool. And you know, so just some useful.
That Nemo chair, that kind of rocking chair.
Doesn't that chair look great?
I mean, I'm not sure I would take especially that camping,
like, I think it's called almost, a stargazer.
Yeah, I'd almost
like
put
that.
It in the backyard or just, you know, just kind of a cool.
A good cottage chair
yeah,
for sure.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, I think a lot of this, like from the perspective of the videos, this is not like backpacking.
Yeah, right.
This is car camping.
Yeah.
For sure, or overlanding somewhere, or maybe somewhere kind of in between the two. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I like Josh's videos. Obviously, a lot of them are about consumerism, which is like up to you if it matters. I just like staying on top of things. I don't have to buy any of this to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some good bits in there. I like the way he shoots it. I like that his presentation's kind of calm and measured for the most part, and most of it's filmed really nicely. So yeah, I'm a fan of his channel. I've been subscribed for a little while. But yeah, I don't know why this time of year comes around and I go like, you know, yeah, I have the cottage, of course, but there's lots of property there that I could put a tent on and enjoy
yeah.
a different type of weekend, maybe with even more mosquitoes. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
A little closer to the swamp just next to
yeah.
us. So.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, it was a good one.
All right. Good stuff. Well, this was a fun episode. Felt very TGN.
Back down
to our wrist check and the whole bit, camping and sailing and... Good stuff. All right.
I promise that the next one will be somewhat less Rolex than the last two.
Yeah.
Can't right. promise no Rolex. It's still a watch podcast, but
yeah,
but I feel like we got some good coverage out of the last couple of bits of travel and that sort of thing. And then still looking forward to Wind Up, which again, surprisingly, is like less than 2 weeks away. So
I know.
We're getting there pretty quickly, but that's going to be a great episode as well. Look, as always, thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to subscribe to the show notes, get into the comments for each episode, or even consider supporting the show directly, which would get you onto the TGN Slack, or maybe even score you a new TGN signed NATO, please visit thegreynato.com. Music throughout is Siesta by Jazzar via the Free Music Archive.
And we leave you with this quote from John A. Shedd, who said, "A ship is safe in harbor, but that's not what ships are for."